Good morning. Suppose some random disaster has hit and you're stranded on an island. Between the following three imaginary persons, who would you most rather be with? Or suppose some unknown virus has emerged yet again and you're now under lockdown. Whose home would you most rather be stuck in and why? Well, the first person is someone who sees the world as an orderly place, that the moral and physical order are wonderfully weaved together in the fabric of reality, so that the good will be rewarded and evil will be punished. To her, life is all about knowing those orders, to live by them, and to acknowledge the wise creator behind them. And she calls everyone to pursue that order, those orders, and remember the creator earnestly. And it's a vision of life and of the world that sounds very simple and ideal, but it can also sound oversimplistic, too black and white, or too good to be true. She herself is very wise and knowledgeable. She's hardworking and principled and self-controlled. She's honest and shrewd and successful. She knows everything about everything. But she's humble, but it's not the usual kind of humble that you expect. You know, she's no shrinking violet. She's strong and valiant, and if you don't mind being seen by her or caught by her right out, you know, be foolish or too simple or too naive, and then you get to visit her place, as she always invites people, it's absolutely amazing. So, for the sake of our conversation, let's call her Sophie. The second person, like Sophie, he has pursued wisdom and become the wisest ruler, or so it's claimed. He says he's seen it all, he's done it all, but he turns out to be quite a different type of person. He sees the world as nothing but smoke and vapor, and life is full of mystery that we don't understand, and things don't always work out the way Sophie describes. Sometimes and oftentimes it's the opposite. You know, the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper, and it's just absurd. And reality doesn't bend towards what we think or what we want it to be true or to be or should be. And he could sound so bleak and jaded that you might think that he's an atheist or a nihilist, and he's not. He mentions God a lot, and at least the idea of it. And then in the end, he tells you to remember God, to fear him, only that he didn't tell you even the name of this God, who this God is, except that he's a creator. And if you could stand him for long enough, you actually might find him, that he might be just, you know, perhaps still searching for answers and looking for some resonance and empathy. And he could be quite fun to be with. Because he would tell you, you know, don't worry so much about, you know, getting life right or study too hard, young people. You know, go enjoy life a little. You know, life is short. Go eat and drink and be merry. And surely he does that himself because, you know, he has the money to splash. He's built houses and planted vineyards. And, you know, he's got servants and even singers in his home. So it's not a bad choice, I guess. So again, for our conversation's sake, let's call him Solo, like Han Solo in Star Wars. And it is a third person, to many people and to God himself even. He's a great man, I mean, a real solid guy. You know, he prays for his children, he worships God, and he tithes regularly. He's been through worse disasters like this one before, in which he lost everything, absolutely everything, wealth and family and health. And it doesn't make sense. He's a great man, and it happened to him, and he lived through it. He actually had dealt with, you know, the conflict between the vision of reality that Sophie and Solo talked about, debate about, and he himself never really got to the bottom of why he had to suffer the way he did, and even in his rock bottom, absolute rock bottom, he remained true, and he has made peace with God and with the fact that he couldn't know everything, and there's so much he can't change. And since then, he seems to be no longer be so concerned with finding out, you know, the explanation to problems or the truth of anything, or, you know, anything for that matter. And for our conversation, let's call him Joey. You know. So here you go. You have Sophie, Solo, and Joey. Imagine yourself stranded on an island because it is some disaster, or you know, who would you most rather be with, or whose home would you most rather be stuck in under a lockdown? I really wish that we were worshiping in person. And if we were, I would have asked you to write down your answers on a piece of paper, and I would, you know, set up 3 islands or homes in different corners of the worship hall, you know, one for Sophie, one for Solo, and one for Joey. And then I would ask you to, you know, stand up and actually physically move there according to your answer, and just share your reason or your whys to people there, or maybe to the whole group. And perhaps to make it more fun, I would have also asked you, you know, whose place do you least want to be in or to be with? And who do you think you're most similar to or most unlike? What other people think of you? And who do you want to become more like most or the least? And then I'll ask you to count up the numbers to all these different questions on your island. And depending on the numbers and the rule of the game, I might flip the island or the home that you may end up finding yourself in, a different sort of place than you first want to be in. Well, as Pat said, you know, today we're summarizing and closing. We're having a grand finale of this whole Wisdom Trilogy series that we've been having for many months. And for those of you who are new, who just tuning in, who've just discovered us, you know, we have been looking at 3 books in the Bible that are together called Wisdom Literature. And we have had 3 series or mini series on each of them, and to look at the view of the world, the outlook on life, the way to relate to God, all the wisdoms and skills that each of these books offer to the listeners to master the art of living. And to those who have been following this series, even though we are far from being able to draw from all, you know, these deep wells of wisdom, you know, but I hope by now we all should have a pretty good honest idea on, you know, the different sorts of wisdom that each of these books offers, and could somewhat see where I was going or what I was attempting just now. I was describing 3 imaginary persons, and each of them is given only one of the 3 wisdom books. You know, the first person only knows Proverbs, the second, Ecclesiastes, and the third, Job. And imagine they, you know, they go about their separate lives fully and exclusively by these wisdoms, by the wisdoms of the book that is available to them. What their lives would be like, and what kind of person would they become? And it shouldn't be hard for you to see which person got which book, because in each book, there is at least one personified image for when its wisdom is fully embodied and lived out in action. Now, in Proverbs, there's this vicar that people call Lady Wisdom in chapter 8 and 9. And then in Ecclesiastes, of course, is this anonymous royal teacher. And in Job, you know, this faithful suffering servant. And a point of the game is to review the wisdom of these books, to get us to read them together and to compare them and contrast them side by side, and to see that there are some real differences between them and what those differences are. And to bring this point home further, here comes the second part of the game. What if it is their turn to be stuck together? What if Sophie and Solo and Joey were stuck on an island or under lockdown in one of their homes? How do you think they would go? What sort of interactions or dynamics could you imagine themselves having? And of course, you have to back your answers, your imagined answers, by verses in their book. And I can imagine, it's not hard for me to imagine that they would have a hard time, at least in the beginning, because of how they see things so differently, how, you know, their outlook to things on life on, and the world and to suffering and all that. And some of them, so these differences seems to be so irreconcilable, like it's just completely incompatible. Or differences that could make them at least, you know, keep on talking past each other and they never go anywhere. Not that they could, I mean, because they're stuck. So for example, Sophie might say something like this, might, like, there's a way out of this. There's an order and science behind everything. And that there's always a reason. You just need to, you know, stop being foolish, you know, seek wisdom and knowledge. And most important of all, listen to me. Because I am in the full embodiment of all wisdom and knowledge. And then Solo might say, you know, well, I think I'm pretty wise too. But who cares? I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, wisdom, you know, knowledge is overrated. Because in the end, you know, wise or not, we all die. the wise die, the foolish die. We all die. And then meanwhile, Joey might be just, you know, sitting there quietly in a corner and praying. Not again, Lord. I've had enough. But nonetheless, let reveal yourself to my two new friends here and let them see you with their eyes and realize there's so much they don't know and they can't control. Let them be okay with that because of you. And of course, you know, this is just my comical sketches, you know, caricatures of them or their respective models. And they are not exactly accurate and fair, but, and really we have to just read these books before we could even dare think that we can read these people like a book. But here's the point. Even in the best version of themselves, they don't see things eye to eye because their respective models don't either. I mean, Lady Wisdom, the royal teacher, and Job, they don't see things eye to eye. They don't see the world and they don't relate to God the same way. And the visions of reality in Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job have some real major differences between them. And each of them has its own distinctiveness. But despite the differences and distinctiveness, they are all included in the same Bible. Each is recognized and highly and equally regarded as the Word of God. And each type of the wisdom is to be sought after, pursued, and applied in our lives and our situation. And the problem is that when we try to do that, it could feel like we are suffering from diplopia. You know, it's like our eyes are seeing doubles or even triples images. You know, each of the images is true, none is false. In fact, you know, on its own, each of them, it could be clear and sharp and in perfect focus. But they are flat, they're dim, it's monocular and not aligned. And together, you know, they're incoherent. And if we force ourselves to look at or to see through the ones that we aren't used to seeing, we feel uncomfortable and confused and dizzy. And if we are to force ourselves to walk by them or to apply them, we could feel unsafe or unsure, or we're like betraying ourselves, or we're not being true to who we are or the self that we think we are or like to be seen. And that is exactly our challenge. You know, we need to apply these seemingly diverging wisdoms collectively to see the fabric of reality through this, you know, triple vision, to see each of the image individually as true and clear, but it's dim and flat and limiting, and to be able to converge them into a single unified vision that is binocular or, you know, even triocular. It's got depth and stereo. It's multidimensional. It's triune, you know, it's three and in one. And we know that we don't need to be playing games. In real life, we all have some Sophies and Solos and Joeys around us, you know, at work or at home, at church, or in our society. And they struggle to do that, to see things like that, to live through those, you know, competing visions of situations and to be able to work together. And so we are in desperate need of individuals and communities who could do that and be that. You know, in the anti-lockdown rallies in Melbourne, you know, we need union leaders and police and doctors and premiers, you know, who can see the different sides of the situation, right? I mean, the overloaded medical system and overworked doctors and nurses. The infiltrators, you know, who use these rallies as a cover to vandalize, to see the frustrations of, you know, the tradies and restaurant workers, and then to seek if there is still, you know, a better way or better ways through these situations, through all the confusion and distractions and possible excuses. And in the midst of, you know, this ongoing political ideological war between the East and the West, in debates about things like the AUKUS partnership and the nuclear submarines, we need politicians and national leaders and public intellectuals who can see the wisdoms and dangers of, you know, the different sides of concern, you know, nationalism versus global or universalism, authoritarian socialism or capitalistic democracy. And even in for us, in CABC, with so many Hong Kongers and mainlanders, as Australians and all the other cultural ethnic hybrids among us, we need to see both the wisdoms and dangers in you know, conformity versus creativity, collectivism versus individualism, and tribalism versus multiculturalism, institutionalism, and a movement mindedness. And to be able to cut through all those isms, you know, by the truth of the gospel of grace. And through, you know, the Mars Hill saga in the US, you know, we need pastors and ministers to be able to see when their commitment to God is starting to become corrupted by their ambition to make an impact or leave a ministry legacy, when their ideas and their own ego are being blown out of proportion, regarded as more important or meaningful in significance than they really are. And to be able to see when issues are real, are pastoral, and shouldn't be minimized or patronized or dismissed. We need elders and deacons who are, you know, principled, that others can follow because of their integrity, but can also see the work and follow the leading of the Holy Spirit, who is often swift and creative, even in moral, ethical dilemmas. We need servant leaders who are faithful enough to trust that their stories, even their brokenness, you know, even the unfair and unjust things that they have to suffer, can be and will be a small but significant part of God's purpose to bless others and to glorify Himself in ways that they themselves don't see. And in social movement, we need, you know, responsible activists who can see the needs and the dangers of heroism, and wise visionaries who can see when certain sacrifice is necessary and will be the first to bear it themselves before calling others to follow, especially the young people. And in our workplace, we need bosses and CEOs who are, on the one hand, able to lead the company forward, but are not pain inflicting, but pain bearing leaders and colleagues and team members, who, you know, who want to do excellent work, but don't just cover themselves when they make mistakes or throw other people under the bus. And we need middle management supervisors who can see to the interests of everyone at different levels to sort of gel everyone together. And in marriages, we need spouses who can appreciate the wisdom in each other and follow the other person's way and also consider when and how to stick to one's own way without making the other feel disrespected or unloved or even betrayed. We need parents who can see that there's a time for everything, you know, a time to be telling and a time to be quiet, a time to allow for mistakes and allow and a time to stop and intervene, a time to be stern and a time to relax a little. And of course, the wisdom to see when is when. And in all our personal endeavors, married with kids or single, young or old, male and female, in all of our personal endeavors, we need to see, you know, when good has become the enemy of the best, or when the best has become the enemy of good, you know, and to live with, you know, disappointment because of our perfectionism or our decision to settle for less. We need to be wise and yet to see ourselves as fools and be able to laugh at ourselves. We need to stop seeing ourselves as the smarter person in the room when we are not, and stop being too scared of looking like a fool to share our thoughts, which might well be God's wisdom given to you and through you to bless others and glorify Him sometimes. We need to stop believing Satan's lie that we are left to our own device, that we have to save ourselves or the planet, you know, from some crisis beyond death or this age, but to believe that we have already been given all the wisdom we need, not to solve everything for eternity, but to discern what we can do within our responsibility in this time and age. And back to this pandemic, we need to be able to see that, you know, not all sufferings are necessary God's judgment on others, but we ourselves aren't always necessary to be blameless and upright like Job either, that we should always be searching our hearts and confess and repent with or without suffering or blessings. I mean, these are the kind of wisdoms or triune vision of life, of the world and of God, or relationship, the kind of individuals and communities that the world desperately needs. But how? I mean, how can any community become all these things at once and have this way of seeing? How can people get this wisdom to get along with one another? And can the Sophies and Solos and Joeys of the world finally learn to humble themselves because of the shared and common wisdom of Lady Wisdom and the Royal Teacher and Job, which is to acknowledge that there is a God and we are to fear Him and humble before Him? How do we know that they would end up be friends? You know, not just high and by friends, or since we're stuck together, we better work it out together kind of friends, but real friends with mutual respect, admirations, and are really fond of each other. Is that even possible for ourselves? Will we ever heed the wisdom of these wise sages and humble ourselves, even when we aren't so sure if they are real historical figures or we don't know their exact sources or who the human authors of this book are? Is there a way we can treat our own vision so that we might see each of those triple images individually as true and clear, but flat and dim and monocular, and yet at the same time be able to converge them together into one single unified stereo vision that has depth and dimensionality? And to be able to be wise enough to apply all of them at once, not feeling we are being hypocrite or feeling self-betrayal, but with integrity and substance and poise, with humility and confidence? The answer is no, we can't, not by ourselves. Christianity says that, you know, we are so foolish and blind that someone whose name we can know, and in Him, these three wise sages have met in Him in perfect oneness, had to suffer the most foolish things the history of humanity has ever known in order to reveal this vision to us, the vision that we must see but can't see on our own. And that revelation has been made known and revealed more than any blindness could miss. And it's more than we could ever deserve and grasp. And that is the gospel. Jesus Christ, because of him, these things are more than possible. They can and will become true. And it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with us or our effort to wise up ourselves or to seek wisdom. No, no, no. It's because of him and only because of him. And he's more than able. He's more than able to open our eyes and make us wise. He's so able that being himself blindfolded and mocked and becoming utterly powerless on the cross is a non-issue to him, because none of those things can even make a scratch or even a dent on his power. And by that power that has raised him from the dead, just as he said, he has promised these things to come true. And he so wants us to have this triune vision, this collective wisdom, that he's willing to become a fool and die on the cross, which is foolishness, absolutely foolishness to the world. And while we're still lost in our folly, while we are still stuck in our island, he came into this world, a world full of stubborn fools, suffering the consequences of all our human follies, in order to search for us, to find us, to put us on his shoulder and to carry us home. And he keeps on searching for us, even when we keep on getting lost and keep on being fools. We are fools, unable to become wise. And yet, the wisest one become a fool, so that the foolish might become wise in him. See, just as we are justified and sanctified by grace through faith alone, not by works, we become wise not by works either, not by our own efforts either. It is through faith in him and by his power and wisdom alone. Believe this. Trust him and trust him. Keep on trusting him more and more. And yes, the Sophies and Solos and Joeys of the world will get along. Our communities on this great big island called Australia will be able to work together. And you and I, despite our follies and flaws and blindness, will be able to see that triple vision and to live by them, not as divided selves, but with inner peace. And to become wise individuals and communities that the world needs. And through us, others might see glimpses of the reality that in him is the fullness of God, the perfect wisdom of our Creator, even the mystery of the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Amen.